Welcome to the Rhone Podcast. Rhone is a curated physicians network that supports concierge, DPC, and private practices so they can remain independent without being alone. We believe that the future success of primary care requires membership-based medicine practices to thrive. Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Pope, CEO of Rhone, and I'm glad you found us. I hope you enjoy this latest episode of the Rhone Podcast. Welcome, everyone. We've got another great episode of the Rhone Podcast for you today. We're actually going to take a little hop across the pond. We've got an outstanding guest that's joining us from London, Dr. Amarjit Randy with the Concierge Clinic, is based in London. Dr. Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for the invite. I know this has been a long time trying to organize a date, but we finally got there.
We did. We absolutely did. We persevered. We initially had this scheduled at the end of 2021, and that was when Omicron really reared its head. And I know that you guys were completely buried there in the UK. And now here we are, and again, persevering through as you're currently in quarantine.
Yeah, the irony of it is that, once Omicron has struck me down, it's probably been the best time to actually schedule some time to do this without any interruptions in a way.
Yeah, well, I hope you continue to have a very mild course there and rapid turnaround and get back to taking care of patients and being with your family. And thank you again for investing the time here to sit down and have a conversation with me. So Dr. Randy, for those who maybe aren't familiar with you that didn't have the chance to meet you when you joined the Rhone annual meeting here in the US back in 2018, tell us a little bit about your journey into concierge medicine. And tell us a little bit more about the concierge clinic in particular as well.
Yeah, so I think my journey was into concierge medicine was largely by accident. I studied medicine in London and then specialized in general practice or family medicine, as it's known in the US. We're a little bit different in the UK in the sense that we look after kids and adults as well. So as the saying goes, from the cradle to the grave. So it's like family medicine for children and adults. And I guess the reason why I got into that was predominantly because of the continuity of care, the variety, and the relationships that you tend to form with patients. So initially started off working in the NHS as a GP and still do now. And I think that's a great environment for learning. The number of cases that you see in the pathology out there is something that's very varied and critical to training and experience. But obviously, as with any kind of large organization, particularly when it's government-backed, there are capacity issues and then there's time constraints and cost constraints as well. So alongside of my NHS work as a GP, I've also been practicing privately as well, which gives you the opportunity, I guess, to practice with a different hat on and be able to spend a little bit more time with patients, but also, I guess, to have more of a preventative emphasis on the way that you practice. So rather than firefighting and always treating things when they're acute or at a crisis, it gives you a little bit of headspace to actually have a look at an individual, where they are in their health journey, and work with them in order to optimize that. And I think that was the aspect that really got me intrigued in terms of private medicine and working in various different private practices. I found that they run as businesses, and sometimes you can easily fall into that kind of mindset of except looking at things more from a business point of view, which is not the way that I like to practice. So that's when I, about 4 or 5 years ago, I set up my own practice, trying to take the best bits of the NHS and private practice and combine them in a way that I thought was best served to treat our patients. with really relationships at the front of it. So that I started doing probably around 2017, not too long after my daughter was born. And it was at that moment that one of your Roamed members, Dr. Lipton, got in touch with me and invited me to a meeting out in New Orleans, which I wasn't quite sure what was going on in terms of, you know, what to expect from that, but it sounded intriguing. So took a flight out, bit of a leap of faith, and actually just met the most incredible physicians running practices in with such a different way of thinking about it in terms of what was membership-based medicine and the concierge model. And then that's something that's a bit alien to us in the UK, because we didn't really have that model set up. But the more that I got thinking about it, I thought to myself, well, I'm already kind of doing this in London. In a way, I've got, you know, I'm trying to build great relationships with my patients, trying to ensure they've got that continuity, and trying to practice preventatively and proactively, which are some of the, you know, hallmark features of concierge medicine. So, you know, having that time to discuss through with other like-minded clinicians that were already doing that in the US, I think when I got back, it really set in stone the kind of direction that I wanted to take my practice, and the way that I wanted to practice. It just helped to, I guess, solidify that thought. And so, yeah, it was really once I got back from New Orleans that I set up the concierge clinic and formalized it. That was my kind of accidental journey into concierge medicine.
You left a very lasting impression on the physicians that you met at that meeting back in 2018. You're held in extremely high regard, and I know that there's a lot of them that are listening in to this episode of the podcast. It's also interesting to me what the similarities in the problems that concierge medicine is solving here in the U.S., where we do have a degree of social medicine with Medicare and Medicaid, and a lot of private insurance, and then, you know, basically now more of a free market that concierge is really trying to solve some of these ills. In the U.K., where there is, you know, socialized medicine, seems like you're solving very similar problems. And one of those that I think you've said the word three times already, if not four, is that continuity of care, right? And being able to invest the time to care for those patients regardless of where they're at. And that's one of the things I really want to focus on for this particular episode, because we've got a couple of really exciting stories that you've gotten to be a part of for a number of reasons that really involve that continuity. And so, you know, part of that continuity is just having that network of like-minded physicians, you know, here locally for us in the States, but also having those connections and relationships abroad that we know, you know, there's folks in the network, there's physicians in the network that have that same approach to patient care, right? It's not the conveyor belt medicine. It's not the churn and burn. I'm going to sit down and spend the time to ask the questions, to get to the bottom of what's actually going on. And you've actually been in a position, I think it was right before the pandemic actually hit. I think it was at the end of 19, maybe the very early part of 20. We had one of our Roamed members in Austin, Texas, had one of his patients that was had taken an assignment for work where she was going to be based in London for 6 months. And you were able to, and I'll stop telling the entire detail of the story, but and let you kind of chime in, but share with our listeners a little bit more about some of that exchange that you had with our member in Austin for that physician who's going to have a patient based in London for 6 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the thing with continuity is obviously we all know that it's it's fantastic for patients. All our patients say that, you know, the fact that they're able to speak to the same doctor or group of doctors that really know them well and know their history, but also quite a bit of the soft knowledge about their preferences as well, which is important when you're having that kind of interpersonal kind of relationship with them. So we know it's important from that part of view, but also for the doctors, it makes my job as a clinician a lot easier if I know the patient well, rather than seeing them for the first time as a one-off. You know, in terms of stress levels and managing kind of uncertainty, you're able to do that a lot easier if you know your patients well. So it's a symbiotic relationship. It's a two-way street in that sense. And I think it's worked on a few occasions with some of our colleagues at Rome, whereby, you know, we've lent on our network a little bit to provide value for our patients. This particular patient was moving to London and essentially just required somebody, I guess, on standby in London. So should something, should the need arise for a face-to-face examination or consultation, then that can be facilitated. And I guess it's just that putting in that legwork and preparation so that you're able to do that. And you're not panicking at the moment when things are required and in crisis, and then suddenly trying to rush around and finding, well, who was that doctor in London that I was once introduced to? I think it's having the foresight to make those connections and build on that relationship before it's required that's important. So this particular patient, I spoke to the usual physician and doctor in Texas. We liaised and was given like a medical note summary. So had a little bit of awareness in terms of the background and what to expect and what not to expect. And it turned out that, you know, I didn't need to see them in the end, but I think for the patient, just having that option there was crucial.
That's the spirit of continuity, right? Is the continuity was there, even though it wasn't necessarily needed at that moment in time. And the peace of mind that conveys to the patient, I'm certain that patient is still enrolled in that physician's practice in Texas because he had gone that extra mile to, you know, connect through the network and have you as boots on the ground just in case. And if you're okay with it, I'm actually going to steal that terminology you use there, the soft knowledge of preferences, right? I love that because there's so much to that patient experience that conveys immediately into the continuity of care. And we talk about that often that, you know, the worst case scenario, and you kind of, you know, talked about it there, when, you know, things are going sideways and going crazy, like, okay, you have to go to an emergency room. Like, yeah, but if I was at home, I would just come to your office, right? And so basically creating that peace of mind, that continuity with the knowledge of soft preferences or soft knowledge of preferences, I think there's just a great story there. And I'm so glad that you and our member in Texas were able to patch that together. And I'm also glad that you didn't need to be deployed, that the patient didn't end up needing to see you at the end of the day. After push comes to shove, you also had another story that came up much more recently about a cardiology patient case. And maybe I'll kind of let you share a little bit more detail about what transpired there, and we'll switch seats. I'll let you do the story, and I'll add the color in this particular one.
Yeah. So this was an interesting patient of mine who lives out in Bahrain, but spent some of his time in the UK and came to see me for his regular health check. All was fairly well. He did have slightly raised cholesterol, but, you know, he'd been seen other doctors in the past and had been on a statin for a period of time and then not on one for a while and wasn't really convinced of the need to take it. So I said, okay, let's take a step back and really assess your cardiovascular risk. And actually, what was great at the time, I actually logged into a Rome webcast, and I think Radley was doing was actually speaking about CT angios and yeah. a new AI based test. So it was kind of on the forefront of my mind, like, let's assess this individual's cardiovascular risk. We need to kind of know what's going on, and then we might be able to sell the idea of a statin to him. He might be more convinced of taking it if it's really required. Of course, as with quite a few of our patients, they only have a limited time, a number of days that they've got to come in. They've got maybe a bunch of meetings they want to schedule in their medical as well. So on the day that he was leaving, was the only day he could fit in having a CT calcium scan. He opted for not for the full CT angio. So we did that. He had to fly back out, despite my attempts to try and persuade him to stay a little bit longer. But you know, he flew out, and I got the results later on that evening. Of course, he was already on a plane, and it showed that his calcium score was elevated, and there was a chance of having a moderate to a significant plaque there. So I was having this conversation with him while he was back in Bahrain. Absolutely, yeah, you need to be on something to lower your risk, but more importantly than that, probably need to assess your coronary arteries in more detail, and you probably ought to have a CT angio, maybe with that additional kind of AI test that Radley spoke to us about as well. The idea was to find somebody in the Middle East, and that's local to him. He was willing to travel to Dubai, Saudi, Bahrain. And it was just really leaning on our contacts in the network to see, you know, could we find somebody there in terms of a specialist? And I guess the advantage of being part of a wide network of physicians is that somebody always knows somebody, even if they're not there themselves. So again, one of our members pointed us to a concierge physician in Abu Dhabi who made some recommendations in terms of local cardiologists, and there were a few other suggestions as well. So that was fantastic, and I think it gave the patient some options, which is what you want to do in this scenario. And you know, I think he felt like he was grateful that he had those local options there rather than blindly doing a Google search. At least he had some names of some vetted cardiologists that were recommended to him. I must say, in the end, he ended up flying back to London and getting his test done. Nevertheless, I think he was grateful of us looking into that for him and at least giving him other opportunities to look for care more locally.
And so one of my favorite parts of that story is that from the UK, you had a patient that was in Bahrain that needed potentially a cardiologist in the Middle East, and you were able to tap into the RUMS network and had somebody from the Western side of the US, somebody from the central part of the US, from the East Coast. You had multiple options that people had kind of fired over your direction, but from your connection in Rome in the US, you were able to source potential options for cardiologists in the Middle East, right? And that just, it speaks so greatly to the spirit of why Rome was initially started, was this idea that we want practices like the concierge clinic, we want them to be independent. We want you to be able to survive as a standalone entity. But that idea of being independent, not alone, and you know, the fact that Rome was able, that you've been on both sides, you've been kind of on the, I'm the boots on the ground side, and you've also been on the receiving side of getting, you know, connected into that network of, you know, folks that we've got all over the globe, as, you know, a second degree, you know, one degree of separation. Thank you so much for sharing that. Knowing that you've And I didn't know that part of the story that you mentioned, where you were listening to one of the webinars that we'd done with Radley that kind of sparked that and put the idea of doing the CT angio and the calcium score on top of your list. And hopefully the patient is doing well and you've got them in a good place. We're almost up on time here, and I want to be respectful of your time. You know, anything else that you want to add, knowing that the audience here is, you know, are your fellow peers?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we've spoken a little bit about patient care and how our patients have benefited from having a close network like this. And apart from those two examples, there's numerous others that I can mention. There's been the wider network has been either on standby or has helped out in both directions. So that's fabulous. But I think one of the really underrated things about being part of a network like this is the peer support. And I think that really came to the fore when the pandemic hit. I remember, you know, we're casting our mind back now a couple of years, and an awful lot has changed. But if I guess all my colleagues, we can think back to, the early part of 2020, where we didn't really have much information about this virus. We didn't really know much about, how deadly was it? How infectious was it? What's the incubation period? What are the best treatments? There was so much information on the internet coming out left, right, and center in terms of, this drug works or that drug works. And the evidence base was sketchy. There was, information overload. It was very, very difficult to keep on top of that. And at the same time, you naturally had worried patients. You are their physician. You've got that relationship with them. They are asking you questions because they're concerned about themselves or they're concerned about family members. So I would wake up in the morning and I'd probably wake up to about 50 to 100 messages from patients asking queries at the height of the panic at the start of this pandemic, I guess the height of the uncertainty. I think at that time, there's only so much that one individual or two individual doctors in a practice can do in terms of scouting the internet and trying to get as much knowledge as possible. And I think being part of, Roamed as well as a few other kind of networks, whether it be WhatsApp groups, etc., with physicians and all over the globe. So they were seeing all this in different times. It was just kind of sharing that knowledge, sharing that experience that we had of what was happening in real time. Getting a little bit more confidence in the fact that actually it's not just me who doesn't know. Everybody else is kind of in the same boat here. And hearing that was a little bit reassuring that, okay, well, there's not a set answer. I'm not doing this wrong. It's just that nobody really knows what to expect yet. So sharing that uncertainty, I think, was vital. We had patients doctors in the Far East, in Europe, like Italy, but obviously these countries got hit with the pandemic first. So the knowledge that they were sharing amongst the groups was really, really valuable. And we could use that then to relay information to our patients in real time. And I think that's really one of the times where being part of a network of peers that are practicing in the same way as you really came to its fore. Because we all practice in a similar way, we've all got that direct, accessibility that we offer for our patients. So we would have all been going through the very similar things.
I love the way that you phrase that too. For those COVID webinars that we did, they were every Monday night, basically every Monday from the end of March till September of 2020, I think there was a multitude of benefits that were garnered from those. One was just being able to be in a quote unquote room, right, that we did through Zoom, and see that you weren't the only one that didn't know the answer. And it's okay to not know the answer if there's not one. But if I'm the only one in the room that doesn't know it, I'm not okay with that. Right. And if one person in the room knows the answer and it's definitive, then by God, let's make sure that all of us know that answer. And just so that, you know, one, shoring up some of those gaps and, you know, with the uncertainty and knowing what information to trust, which to, you know, discard. It's hard to overstate the mental health value that is involved in that from your perspective, from a physician's perspective, to just have exposure to that and not be on an island and be in the dark, but to have the networks that you're able to tap into and to give you the peace of mind that you've done the research, you've done the legwork, you've got in front of people that if there's an answer, these are the folks that are going to know it. And that peace of mind is priceless when everything else in the world was going sideways and crazy and nuts. And oh my gosh, the number of unknowns far outweighed the number of knowns. Dr. Amarjit Rani, physician and founder of the Concierge Clinic based in London. You've been a dazzling guest, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back and be a guest again very soon.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, absolutely. Would love to. And hopefully we'll meet up face-to-face soon on one of the next Rome meetings.
I love it. Well, take care of yourself, take care of your family, and look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you, Scott. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Roan Podcast. If you enjoyed your time here, be sure to subscribe. If you have a story you would like to share on the Roan Podcast, I encourage you to reach out. After all, we are stronger together. Now, I invite you to take a few for you and enjoy 3 minutes of relaxing audio. Be well, my friends.